Good evening, and thank you for joining tonight's telephone town hall hosted by the Colorado Department of Transportation and the High Performance Transportation Enterprise, or HPTE. My name is Roger, and I'll be your moderator tonight as we talk about the I-70 East project with Shannon Gifford, Transportation Commissioner and incoming HPTE board member, Tony DeVito, I-70 East project director, Mike Schrodis, HPTE director, and Kelly Lead, Executive Director of the North Denver Cornerstone Collaborative. We have called residents along the I-70 East Corridor from Denver to Aurora and expect an interesting and lively conversation. We hope you will stay on the line and participate. Let me tell you a little bit about the format for tonight's call. We want this to be very interactive, so if you'd like to ask our panel a question, please press *3 on your telephone keypad, and you'll be transferred to an operator who will take down some basic information. Once the operator notes your information, you will be returned to the call and can listen to the conversation until it is your turn. So again, please press *3 on your keypad to ask a question. While we will give an overview of the I-70 East project and where the team is in the planning process, we really want to focus tonight's discussion on funding for I-70 East and the next steps in selecting a developer to build the project. Our panelists will give you some brief thoughts and information on the subject, and then we would love to get your questions. Since our panel would like to hear from as many people as possible, we'll limit all callers to just one question. When it's your turn, I'll call your name and ask you to repeat the question for our live audience. We'll also be asking some survey questions later during the call, and I'll explain that process to you in just a few minutes. So again, once again, press *3 on your keypad to ask a question. Now let's turn the call over to Commissioner Shannon Gifford, and she is here representing the Transportation Commission and HPTE board member. Shannon, would you introduce yourself and get us started?
Thanks, Roger. We really appreciate everyone joining us tonight. My name is Shannon Gifford, and I'm a Colorado Transportation Commissioner and incoming HPTE board member. HPTE is a separate government-owned business within CDOT that helps the state determine the best ways to finance large, important projects on a case-by-case basis, such as the I-70 East project in Northeast Denver. Like many state DOTs, we struggle with how to finance our state's infrastructure needs with very limited resources. HPTE looks at what type of financing structure will bring the best value for taxpayers, for the state, and for CDOT. For I-70 East, that means pursuing a public-private partnership. We also look at every project through the lens of choice, providing more choices for drivers and for those who don't have cars or simply wish to leave them at home. It's no longer enough to just build additional lanes to address a growing population and increase traffic. We have to look at innovative options like express lanes, some of which just opened up on US 36, and how we can either partner with transit agencies or maximize transit services that are being built near our major corridors. It's a new era for CDOT, but one that is being defined by innovation and managing traffic more efficiently.
All right. Thank you, Shannon. Next, I'd like to call on Tony DeVito. Tony, please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about the I-70 East project itself.
Thanks, Roger, for asking me to be here. My name is Tony DeVito, and I am the I-70 East project director. Before we talk about the financing details about I-70 East, I wanted to remind everyone of the project elements and where we are in those processes. The current Phase 1 project for I-70 East includes adding an additional express lane in each direction of I-70 from I-25 to I-225, removing that 50-year-old viaduct between Brighton Boulevard and Colorado Boulevard, and in this stretch, lowering the interstate and constructing a 4-acre cover over this portion of the lowered interstate. This cover is mitigation to the communities of Globeville, Elaria, and Swansea that were separated when the interstate system was created in Colorado. This project is the first time CDOT has been able to make significant safety and mobility improvements to this stretch of I-70 East in over 50 years. Currently, we are going through a process to select the best design, build, finance, and operate team to work with us to deliver this project. Mike will cover this process in a moment. We are also continuing the 10-plus year environmental planning process. This process will ensure that the project is delivered within all the commitments that have been discussed for years. I want to emphasize that while they are happening at the same time, the selection process does not prejudge the final project to be constructed, which will be determined at the end of the environmental impact statement process. The final environmental impact statement is due to be released in January 2016. But right now, we are discussing several items with the community, including aesthetics, and how will we mitigate all these impacts. If you are interested in learning more about that, we have public meetings this week in both Aurora and Denver, and you can find those addresses and times at our website, www.i-70east.com. This project has been studied and planned for a very long time, and we couldn't be more excited that possible construction is on our horizon in 2017. Mike Shirotis with the HBTE can give more insight into that procurement process.
All right, thanks, Tony. Again, if you have joined us and you'd like to ask a question, our focus tonight is on financing for the I-70 East project. And like Tony mentioned, we encourage you to go to the public meetings for the planning process. For times and locations, again, the website is i-70east.com. That's i-70east.com. If you have a question tonight, please press *3 and you'll be transferred to an operator who will take down some basic information and get you in the queue. So please press *3 now because we'll be getting to questions in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to start by asking a question, and that is, what kind of community input have you asked for before now? Anyone who'd like to address that? Tony or Mike, do you want to talk about community input?
Yeah, I can say a few words about it, Roger. We've, at HBTE, spent a good deal of time in this process, making sure that we connect as often and as closely as possible to the community. We've had over the last year, a number of town hall meetings, a number of community meetings, particularly in the Swansea-Elyria areas. We continue to be committed to full transparency on this project. Tony mentioned that we've got some meetings coming up this week. We encourage people to get out. We'd like to hear from you then. And throughout the process, we will be as open and transparent as we can be.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Let's go to, we got a question from Nick. It's not, Nick, go ahead.
Well, I just want to know when, if ever, we're going to get the light rail system out to DIA. You know, I know that's not your I-70 thing, but come on, man, we could really use this.
All right, Nick, thanks. Tony, do you want to, one, explain, it's an RTD project. Maybe you can talk about how RTD and CDOT are collaborating a little bit even on this I-70 project.
So originally, RTD was in this project, planning process with us many years ago, and luckily they were able to break free, and they've been building the Eagle line, the Eagle P3, and that line is scheduled to open here in 2016, and so we're excited that multimodal aspect is ready to go.
All right, next question is from Scott. Go ahead, Scott, with your question.
Yes, so I don't really have a problem with you guys adding toll lanes in each direction, but I also like for you to add at least one or two more regular lanes for people to use too. And I guess that's my question right there. How many toll lanes you going to have in each direction, or how many other lanes you can use for free in each direction too?
Tony? Okay, so currently there are three general purpose lanes in each direction for a total of six lanes. In phase one, we'll be adding one additional managed lane in each direction. So at the end of phase one, we'll have a total of eight lanes, two that are managed. What we have out there is general purpose will remain as general purpose in the future.
All right, thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over now to Mike Shirotis with HPTE to talk about the public-private partnership and how the selection process for the project will occur. Mike, go ahead.
Thanks, Roger, and thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight. Bear with me a couple of minutes. I've got a lot of information to try to get out. As Roger mentioned, I'm here on behalf of HPTE. Last year, CDOT asked us to explore whether the I-70 East Corridor might be a good candidate for a public-private partnership, or P3 approach, where the state partners with a private entity to design, build, finance, operate, and maintain the project. P3 has been used in the metro area on US 36, as well as on RTD's Fast Tracks, which we just talked about, rail project, and the redevelopment of Denver Union Station. We considered a number of factors, including whether a partnership could accelerate the project schedule, whether or not it could save taxpayers money and reduce risk to taxpayers, and just how much value we might be able to get for the taxpayers' dollar. Right now, we are exploring a P3 for the project. In particular, CD and HPTE are pursuing a design, build, finance, operate, and maintain delivery model, which involves long-term investment and or a long-term contract with the private sector. In this case, we refer to the private sector as the developer, and that team will finance some or all of the capital costs of the project and be responsible for designing, building, financing, operating, and maintaining and rehabilitating the highway over a long period of time. It's important to remember that the state still owns the highway, and CDOT will remain all over the developer to ensure accountability and quality control. In this model specifically, our payments to the developer are limited to performance payments, which further limits public risk. I can explain that a little bit better if people have questions. Recently, we issued a request for qualifications, and we received 5 statements of qualifications, shortlisting 4 teams, very strong teams. You can see those teams on our website at www.coloradohpte.com. Our next step in the procurement process will be to release the draft RF request for proposals, or RFP, next month. I got tripped up on my own acronyms. I know we use a lot of them. So let me explain exactly what an RFP is. It is one of the most important elements in this highly competitive selection process. It lays out CDOT's concept of technical scope, the contractual requirements we're going to want to get from the developer, and performance standards for the project, and requests highly detailed information about how the teams propose to finance, do the actual design and construction work, and maintain and operate the I-70 East project. The teams will be required to provide detailed financial information, performance standards, how they will ensure transparency and meet the goals of the state, of the general public, and of the impacted communities, a very important part of the project. After next month's draft RFP, we will have 2 more drafts in early 2016, and next spring before the final RFP in the summer. All of the drafts will be public if you wish to see them. Again, I refer you to that same www.coloradohpte.com site. We want your input on this. We encourage you to tell us your thoughts on, for example, what criteria should be considered during the RFP process in selecting a developer for the project, what topics are important to you, and how should the developer be required to handle such areas as communication, maintenance, environmental and workforce utilization. In terms of next steps, we hope to select a developer in fall of 2016 and have financial and commercial close by early 2017.
All right. Thank you, Mike. We're getting a little feedback on the phone. Oh, there it's gone. Okay. Mike, thank you very much. Again, if you have a question, please press *3. Before we take our next question, let's ask our first survey question. To participate, use your telephone keypad to enter the number of your response. We're going to focus on something that Mike just mentioned. So here's the question. Of the main areas that will be included in the request for proposal, or RFP, for the developer, which is the most important to you? Press 1 on your phone if the most important topic to you is how the developer communicates to the public during construction. Press 2 if the most important topic to you is how the developer maintains the I-70 East corridor after it's built. Press 3, if the most important topic to you is how the developer addresses environmental concerns and issues. And press 4, if the most important topic to you is how they provide jobs. So 1 for communication, 2 for maintenance of the I-70 East Corridor, 3 for environmental concerns and issues, and 4 for how they provide jobs. Please press the number now, record your vote, and I'll share the results with you in just a few minutes. And while you are voting, we'll take another question. Again, don't forget, if you want to ask a question of our panel, press star 3 on your keypad. We're going to go to Carl. Carl, thanks for holding. Go ahead with your question.
Hello? Hello?
Go ahead, Carl. You're live. What's your question?
Oh, I'm live? Hello?
Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. Three things. I'd like to have a system built where they should talk about how to finance. Let's have the two governments work together and use a lottery system to pay for the financing. Second, if they can use a park and ride system where people have to travel to, like, DIA, have a round-trip ticket, affordable so that people can go to work, get off work, take the rapid transit, and park where they park the vehicle at, so they can go home easily. And third, it minimizes a lot of traffic on the highways and Pena Boulevard due to the weather situations. It's going to be a lot of hazard situations. I appreciate if they can have something that we can minimize those traffic so the city trucks and snowplows can work those highways and minimize the traffic situation.
All right, Carl, thank you. Shannon, do you want to talk about financing the project? Are lottery funds a viable source?
Sure. So, Carl, by statute, state lottery funds must go to the parks, recreation, and open space. So that's not a potential source of funds for us on this project. And I think I should mention that we have another similar question in the queue here regarding marijuana taxes. And again, by statute, these are not available for transportation funding.
Thank you, Commissioner. Here are the results of our first polling question. Again, we asked of the main areas that will be included in the request for proposal, what for the developer, which is the most important to you? 35% said maintaining the I-70 East Corridor after it is built, and second was 28%, how the developer provides jobs. We appreciate your participation. We'll have another question for you later, and let's go to our next question. Again, press star 3 if you'd like to ask a question of our panel. Nancy, go right ahead.
Hello. I am just concerned about the future. I live in Aurora, and we take 70 east, west quite often. And we travel the 270 corridor quite a bit. It's so packed, and there are no extra lanes. There's no shoulder. And I've noticed 70 in a lot of areas doesn't have a shoulder. Is there a way that we can maximize our investment by adding wide shoulders on both sides so that maybe later we can add another lane and save the taxpayers money?
Nancy, this is Tony DeVito. That's a great question. You know, a lot of the stretch in here hasn't been addressed in a lot of years. And if we look at the stretch of I-70, one of the focus points has been the viaduct. It still remains one of the first 30 identified worst structures. It's the one that we haven't been able to address. And it is a 50-year-old structure built in 64 that has seen repairs over the years but has reached its useful life. And if it is a stretch that is narrow, 11-foot lanes, and no shoulders, and so it does fail very readily with any sort of an accident, but even just a breakdown. And so, you know, we've been involved in this study, and it has been prioritized, but doesn't mean it's not the only stretch of our interstate system that needs assistance.
Okay, let's go next to, how about Rennie. Thank you. Rennie, go right ahead.
Oh, hi, this is Rennie from Aurora. And I have a few questions. First of all, I'd like to ask, what is the total expectation of the completed project cost?
Rennie, this is Tony DeVito again. Our budget that we're looking at right now for this Phase 1 project is $1.7 billion. No? $1.17, I apologize for that. $1.17 billion.
Kelly, this is Mike Chirotis, if you're still on. I can help on the toll rate part of your question, which I see was of interest to you. We're going to use tolls in those managed lanes to truly manage the congestion in those lanes. We know we're not going to be able to pay for this project with toll revenues, but we will use the toll revenues to make sure that people have a reliable travel time. Those toll revenues will be used to maintain the road at a high level, and we're committed to keeping those toll revenues in that corridor.
Okay, thanks, Mike. For those of you who joined us late, good evening, and thank you for joining tonight's Telephone Town Hall, hosted by the Colorado Department of Transportation and the High Performance Transportation Enterprise. My name is Roger, and I'm your moderator tonight as we talk about the I-70 East project. You can participate by pressing *3 on your keypad if you'd like to ask a question. You'll be transferred to an operator, and we'll get some quick information and get you in the queue. So again, *3 on your keypad to ask a question. This also might be a good time to mention that if you need to leave the call early, and we certainly hope that you don't, and we've still got about 40 minutes left. But if you need to leave early, you can press *9 and leave us a voice message. So again, *3 to ask a question live. *9 if you need to leave the call and want to leave a voice message. So why don't, before we get take our next call, let's ask Kelly Leed to come on the line and introduce himself and give a City and County of Denver perspective. Kelly, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Roger. Hey, I am happy to be here and part of the town hall. My name is Kelly Leed, the Executive Director of the North Denver Cornerstone Collaborative, or NDCC for short. The NDCC is an initiative of Mayor Michael B. Hancock to strategically align 6 redevelopment projects in Globeville, Elyria, and Swansea. The NDCC is part of a larger citywide vision to connect Denver Union Station to Denver International Airport, also called the Corridor of Opportunity. Globeville, Elyria, and Swansea are important neighborhoods in this community and act as a gateway into downtown Denver. The I-70 project is one of 6 NDCC projects and is a crucial corridor for our surrounding communities like Aurora and ties the airport directly to our biggest tourist destinations, our mountains. It's also an important corridor for many businesses that use it daily to transport goods and services. The I-70 corridor has had a positive impact on Denver, but we also understand that it's provided a variety of challenges for the neighborhoods adjacent to the highway. In the past, I-70 has split neighborhoods, and Elyria-Swansea have felt the biggest impact. The NDCC is focused on reconnecting communities, and the I-70 East project does as well. Through the I-70 EIS process, CDOT, Denver, and other communities have worked together to explore options and come up with solutions to better bring the neighborhoods together and tie this bustling highway to exciting Denver projects under the North Denver Cornerstone Collaborative, such as the redevelopment of Brighton Boulevard and the National Western Center. The City and County of Denver continues to be involved and provide input to ensure that city's interests are represented in such a monumental project. We are encouraged by how many of you continue to stay involved, and we are also listening and participating tonight.
Great, Kelly, thank you very much. Let's take a question now from Randy. Randy, go ahead.
Yeah, all of these big projects like T-Rex, et cetera, by the time they're completed, they're already outdated and they cannot handle all of the traffic of Denver. It's just booming. So my question is, how is this project going to help alleviate all of the traffic jams that we have now every single day?
Randy, this is Mike Schrodis. I'll take a crack at that. I agree with you that the population explosion around here is something to behold. I think what's important here is to remember that we are adding capacity onto I-70. We're adding at least one new lane in each direction. That's in phase one of this whole project. I think there will be room for later expansion of that. But more importantly, we're going to be able to control the throughput on the managed lanes that are being added so that over a period of time we will maintain as congestion-free travel on that lane and on the general purpose lanes as possible. It's a problem. It's a financial problem for the state. We're doing the best we can to address that.
Thank you, Mike. We're going to go next to Mickey. Mickey, thanks for holding. And again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 3 and we'll get you in the line. Mickey, go ahead.
I'm concerned about the impact of the neighborhood. Who's going to pay for the activity that's happening on the cover, the various exits to make sure that people have access to the communities? We've talked about rec centers, et cetera, on there. Is that included in the RFP, and who is going to bear the burden of meeting the community needs?
Mickey, this is Tony, and that's a great question because the stretch of the interstate has a varied mix of residential and business and commercial that we are going to be working adjacent to for quite a few years. And so a lot of the study that we've been doing for numerous years through the NEPA process has been focused about this community and how do we handle some of the past impacts, and that is why we are proposing the lowered section with a lid instead of another viaduct, because we wanted an opportunity here to reconnect the neighborhoods. And even though they had a connection currently underneath the current viaduct, we in community outreach and hearing from the community, there is excitement and there is acceptance of this 4-acre area as a connecting point. And so, but there are other issues of the construction impacts and everything else. And department is responsible, and we will work in conjunction with the developer to ensure that those commitments that we've been making are met during the construction phase.
All right, thank you. Let's go next to Deborah. Deborah, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Deborah in Denver. I am concerned. We're talking about this being a $1.7 million project, and I'm wondering what efforts are being made, what outreach has been made to make sure that the workforce is inclusive as it relates to contracts with minority and small businesses. If someone could, Mike, that might be in your area, but if someone could address that, I would be very interested in that. And also, if there is a panel or a selection committee that is in the process of putting together criteria to make sure that inclusiveness in this project is at an acceptable standard.
So this is Tony, and I'll answer that one. It's another great question. Let me start off by first clarifying. I apologize for the verbal typo here. It is a $1.17 billion project. We'll just say 1.2 then. How's that? This is an interstate project with the participation of the federal government, and so most definitely we'll have disadvantaged business and small business requirements that will be into the RFP. And we'll break those into three areas. We're going to break those into the design process, the construction process, and the 30-year maintenance process of the maintenance and operation of this stretch of interstate with the concessionaire.
All right, thanks, Tony. Why don't we take a quick break and go to our second poll question. And again, to participate, just use your keypad and vote the number to the answer that you agree with most. Here's the question. Once CDOT and HPTE have selected a developer, what is the number one way you prefer they communicate to you? Press 1 if you want regular stakeholder and public meetings. Press 2 if you prefer electronic communication like emails or weekly alerts. Press 3 if you'd like to find the information yourself on a robust project website, and press 4 if you would visit a local project office. So again, 1 for stakeholder and public meetings, 2 for electronic communication, 3 for the project website, and 4 for local project offices. Again, I'll share the results with you in just a few minutes, and we're going to go next to Barbara while you're voting. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. I'm interested in knowing what is projected in terms of the life of this project. We have these projects who built and then that haven't had the proper amount of material in it. It's been a disaster. And I'm wondering who will be monitoring that along with, I know you'll have contracts of different firms building, but who is going to be responsible for being sure that the proper type of materials put in to make this lasting, and how long is the projection that it will last?
Barbara, I'm going to take a shot at this. Thanks for the question. It's a good question. It illustrates in one aspect anyway the benefit of doing this as a public-private partnership where you've got the same team that is responsible for building the project, also responsible for operating and maintaining that project over the term of the contract, which will be about 30 years, I think, and handing it back at the end of that contract in rehabilitated state. So you've got the same contractor who's building the project responsible for making sure that it's operated and maintained in an appropriate way. So they're going to build it so that they can fulfill their responsibilities on the operation and maintenance side. We will build into the contract a full regime of oversight. And as I said in my remarks, we'll be overseeing that throughout. Their payment for the contract will depend on their performance, and we think it's a good example of how we can derive value out of the private sector.
Hey, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Let's go next to Tracy. Tracy, what's your question tonight?
Thank you. I'm curious about the railroad system, and sorry to take us back a little bit, but this question is probably for Kelly. With the Western Complex, the National Western Complex there, and it being probably the main port for this region as it relates to the railroad system, how is that being factored into this transportation plan? And specifically because it's on the corridor, we certainly couldn't ignore it. So if someone could speak to that, if there's anyone that can. Thank you.
You're back. Kelly,
sure.
You want to take that?
Sure, happy to, and great question. So, you know, you're exactly right. This corridor has long been an industrial corridor, and the railroads have played a very important role, both the Burlington Northern and the Union Pacific. And so, you know, I can certainly speak to the National Western Project, but it's true probably for most of the project in this region, is that obviously working closely with the railroads, you know, in particular with the National Western, not only are we dealing with both the Union Pacific and Burlington Northern, but also what's called a short line railroad, which pick up cars from the mainline carriers and take them to businesses. And so we're working with those carriers, one, to make sure that while we're making these improvements, be it the highway or the National Western or roads around the highway, that we don't do anything to disrupt the operation of the railroad. Obviously, that's really important. The second is, you know, creating more safe passages for these railroads. We have a lot of at-grade crossings in this part of the city, and so we're constantly looking for ways where we can create, whether it's separated crossings or just safer crossings, so that we can get people and bikes and cars through this corridor in a safer way. So, you know, like everything we're doing in this corridor, we are collaborating with the railroads and finding places where we can work together to improve their operations, their service, and then ultimately improve the lives of folks that have lived around these railroads for a long time.
Okay. Thanks, Kelly. So here are the results of our second polling question. Again, we asked, once CDOT and HPTE have selected a developer, what is the number one way that you prefer they communicate to you? And 42% said regular stakeholder and public meetings, good old-fashioned way, and 27% said electronic communication like emails and weekly alerts. We appreciate your participation, and we'll make sure the selected developer gets that feedback once they're selected. Next, we're going to go to a question from Pamela. Go ahead.
Yes, my question relates to, and it may have been partially answered with the 30-year window, but for the developer that is selected and the tolls that are put in on existing, you know, roads that already have general public lanes, are the tolls being used to just build and maintain those particular toll lanes, or are they being used for the maintenance and upkeep of all of the lanes? And once the window of time, if that window of time is in fact 30 years, is over, it's then, you know, no longer toll lanes, or exactly how does that work?
Pamela, thanks for the question. This is Mike again. You're right that during the term of the contract, the tolls will need to stay in place with respect to the use of the managed lanes. Remember, though, that CDOT will retain, HPTE will retain the tolling authority here, the tolling collection, and the tolling revenue allocation. The intent in setting those tolls, which will be time of day tolls, in other words, higher during peak periods, less to, you know, very little during other periods, will be to try to maintain free flow on the managed lanes, so that people who don't want to use the congested general purpose lanes, or for some reason enjoy paying tolls, the general purpose lanes are there and the managed lanes will stay tolled. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Mike. Let's go next to Laura. Laura, what's your question?
Hi. You may have partially answered this already, but I'm, okay, not satisfied with the answer. What is the advantage of using a private sector employer on this rather than having the state do it itself? It seems to me that we're spending an awful lot of money. Maybe those of you who handle money all the time don't see this as a lot of money, but as soon as you say billion, that's a lot of money. What guarantees do we have as far as cost overruns go? I'm thinking about the Veterans Hospital. I guess the basic question is, what is the advantage of having a private sector company do this over having the state do it itself?
In this case, the advantage, this is Mike again, in this case, the advantage is that we are able to shift the risk of a very complicated project to a private sector partner. So, for example, if the project isn't completed within the time span that's allotted in the contract, they're at risk. We don't pay for that. They will pay penalties. If the project is poorly constructed, they have the risk of reconstructing, and we don't. We pay a little bit more for it. There's no doubt about that. But the transference of risk for the project is why we're going to the private sector for help on this.
All right, Rennie, you're back. Go ahead. I think we cut you off before this question.
That's all right. I was just curious, once the RFP goes out for the design build, will the estimated cost be guaranteed that we will get it at that cost?
This is Tony, and Rennie, yeah, once we finalize the contracting, we are at a final negotiated price, and as Mike had said, they have identified and taken ownership of those risks associated with that price.
Okay. You know, I think Rennie had also asked or had wanted to know a little more detail about phase one. Could you just, Tony, maybe go into a little more detail on phase one? What does that include?
You bet. Phase one is a between Brighton and Colorado, a complete reconstruction in that stretch. That is the stretch of the viaduct, and that will be the stretch that will actually be where we'll take the grade below. So as you come over Brighton and as we dip down underneath the railroads, we will bring the interstate down about 30, 35 feet. And then the four-acre lid will be between Clayton and Columbine, which is on the south side of Swansea Elementary School, if you're familiar with the area. And at that point, we start climbing back up, and we tie back in to current grade at Colorado Boulevard. From Colorado Boulevard East, we're adding an additional lane, so it's our typical highway construction where we'll be working in the median, shifting lanes, building to the outside in our typical fashion when we tackle a widening project on the interstate. And that will run out just past 225, in which that point as we get further east, it's a lot of the existing pavement that we're reconverting and tying in then back into the existing template east of 225. New interchanges and new crossovers throughout the length of the project.
Thank you, Tony. Let's go to Amy next. What's your question tonight?
Well, my original question was about minority hiring, because when they did the federal project, there was no incentive for young black males, females, or minorities to be hired on that project. So I'd like some set-asides for the people in the neighborhood and for minority people. And then my next question pertains, it was about, they answered the question about the railroads, but how does the light rail figure into this on its way to DIA? And, of course, the stock show, the Coliseum, there's a lot of businesses and projects. And then I can't remember what city I was in, but they had a covered highway, and on top of that, they had small businesses, or they had small Burger Kings and 7-Elevens. They actually had some businesses that really made the neighborhood kind of not upscale, but it provided jobs. So I know that's a lot of things that I'm asking. But the last question is, has anybody thought of having a toll road or toll lane for just semis? Because one of the biggest problems coming from East I-70 are the semis that are coming through on their way to the West Coast. They create a lot of traffic, so they should
have
some.
All right, Amy. Thank you for that. I'm going to have Tony address some of the lane, and then maybe we'll ask Kelly to jump in on, because you touched on rail
yep.
coming through the area and the National Western Center. Tony,
right,
you want to start?
Yeah.
I will address some of those. Most definitely, we'll stay very involved with the community, and we will be working very closely with if there are any opportunities as we work forward with the disadvantaged business programs and others to try to incorporate as much local presence as possible. We'll continue to look through that. You know, the use of the lid right now and working with the community, they're really looking at it as more of a rec and gathering area. Part of it will be incorporated with the school, and we've been working with the schools, Denver Public Schools, and with City and County of Denver, and being sure that we can incorporate some community aspects. And for the follow-up question, we'll hand it off to Kelly.
Great. Thanks, Tony. So in terms of the rail, and again, another really good question. So, you know, in addition to the heavy rail of the Union Pacific and Burlington Northern, and then the short line rail, which are the folks that pick up cars from the heavy rail and deliver them to businesses. And then we're adding, obviously, a third component of rail. We're adding the fast tracks system into this community. And I would tell you, the one, we have a great working relationship with RTD. And in this sector of the city in particular, in the Global Area Swansea neighborhoods, we have three commuter rail lines that are all under construction. We have the Gold Line, which is to the west of the National Western, which will come online this next year with a stop at 41st and Fox. The East Line, which is to the south of the National Western Center, which will go from DUS out to the airport, has two stations, one at 38th and Blake, and then one at 40th and Colorado. That will come online this next year as well. And then the North Metro Line will run out of Denver Union Station with its first stop at the National Western Center. So we'll have rail service for the first time in a long time that can bring folks from all over the Front Range via that system to the National Western Center if they so choose to use that. So we're working closely with RTD, like all the projects. I mean, one of the benefits of the NDCC is a really strategic effort to align all the planning, both within the city and our partners, RTD, CDOT, and others, leverage all that planning for more implementation, right? Trying to get more out of all the projects and spreading the dollars and making the dollars work more for those communities that have not seen really any infrastructure investment for a long, long time. The last part of your question was about the businesses. The Short Line rail system does supply a number of businesses in that region. And again, we're working, you know, with them to improve their rail system through the National Western so that they can continue to deliver services to the businesses in that region of the city, and some bleed into Adams County. But the goal here is obviously improved infrastructure so that we can continue to have a vibrant kind of industrial corridor, but also adding now passenger rail, which is really exciting, I think, in terms of improving people's access in and out of these communities.
Thanks, Kelly. Okay, let's go next to Esther. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, I'd like to know the impact of living in Elyria with the construction and with the construction going on. How is that going to affect people that didn't get their homes? The CDOT didn't take their homes, but they have to be left here to stay. How would that impact them and their, you know, how would that affect them with living in that type of environment?
Esther, thank you. Tony?
Esther, great question. I'm glad we're reaching out to the those in the community. Esther, you know, construction is difficult, and we're going to be in there in the communities, and we've been talking with the communities about some of the ways that we can work with the contractor to mitigate noise and dust. We'll be working with the City and County of Denver permitting process, and so there's noise ordinances that will have to be followed. The biggest part of a lot of this is being sure that we get our customers and those affected in this area, you know, reliable and accurate information about what's really going on the project. And, that is something that this team is going to really strive for.
All right, Tony, thank you. Let's ask our last poll question. It kind of relates to things that both Amy and Esther mentioned, our last two questions. So here it is again, just use your telephone keypad to register your vote. Here's the question. Among the following goals of the I-70 East project during construction, which one is your top priority? So press 1 if your top priority is minimize construction impacts to the public and nearby communities. Press 2 if your top priority is safety of the project workforce and public. Press 3 if your top priority is stay on or under budget. Press 4 if your top priority is completion on or ahead of schedule. And press 5 if your top priority is to maximize the scope and benefits of the project. So again, 1 for minimize construction impacts, 2 for safety, 3 for stay on or under budget, 4 for completion on or ahead of schedule, and 5, maximize scope and benefits of the project. Again, record your vote now, and I'll share the results with you in a minute. While you're voting, we're going to take a question from Larry. Go ahead. Larry, you're on live. Do you have a question for us?
Well, I heard a couple of questions asked, but I didn't hear too much of an answer. One was about the truck lanes from I-70 East coming into Denver going west. I didn't hear no answer on that. My main question was, when this project has started, was there any consideration for interchanges at Colorado Boulevard, Quebec, and Peoria? because it doesn't seem to make sense to have lanes increased, but you have no interchanges to take advantage of these lane changes. And the part of that is that, is there any kind idea or plans to make alternative routes in the city other than going I-70 or I-25?
Tony? All right. So as part of the project, all those interchanges that you mentioned are addressed as part of this project. They are reconstructed and will accommodate the future templates and the different movements that are needed. And not only the structure is substandard, but we have a lot of those interchanges that are also substandard. So, yes, we'll be addressing those. You know, alternate routes, I'm assuming that's a question, you know, kind of during construction. And until we get the developer on board and actually know their method of attack to the project, it's a little premature for us to start talking about what are the viable or needed alternate routes. You know, and then the question about, you know, the trucks and everything else on the corridor, you know, we do have to balance. You know, this is a corridor that serves a lot of employees. There's a lot of businesses that have chosen to locate along this stretch of the interstate for the main reason that of what the interstate provides as a lifeline to the state. And so we need to balance, you know, the workforce, the commuters, and everybody else. And that's what we feel is the best achieved, and we're seeing that on other managed lane projects in the state by allowing the addition of the managed lane concept.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Here are the results of our final poll question. Again, we asked which of the following goals of the project during construction of the following goals that we listed, which one is your top priority? 27% said maximize the scope and benefits of the project, and 24% said minimize construction impacts. Thanks for your help on these polls, and we appreciate your participation. We're going to take the next call from Andrea. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank you guys for even doing these calls. It really helps a lot for those of us who don't have the opportunity to get out, so thank you for that. But I wanted to ask about the environmental impact, and I know you said that they were going to be selecting a developer, and I'm assuming maybe construction company, sometime in 2016. So do these individuals, do they have to have a proven record of working with areas that have been impacted by environmental toxicity? Because I know the Swansea area and those areas have high concentrations of toxicity in their soils and things. So one, will these companies have to have a proven record of being able to work with that? And two, if the community finds during construction that there is a higher level of issues, will you stop the project? Will you deal with the project in a way that helps the community? Or will you basically just let them continue to work and just say eventually, you know, some of that will die down? And then the other question I have is, will you also statistically do numbers of people who have permanent jobs, not only during the construction but after the construction, of individuals that live in and around the community?
This is Tony again. That was a great, great group of questions. On the environmental, you know, one of the things that comes out of studying an area for 12 years is that we really know a lot about, you know, the environment and the study and the area that we're working into. And as part of our qualifications screening that we went through, we wanted to, we actually screened the group of developers that had submitted based on work in similar conditions, and the environmental was one that we definitely took a hard look at and wanted to be sure that these groups of developers had a proven track record in those areas. You know, great question on, you know, being sure this is an opportunity for us to really kind of identify,
you know, some of the opportunities a project like this does bring to the Denver metro area. And so, yeah, we'll be definitely, those are great suggestions on, you know, project stats that we should be tracking, those that are employed during construction and then jobs created and industries created afterwards that maintain.
Thanks, Tony. Let's go next to Frank. Frank, thanks for holding. What's your question?
Hi, my name is Frank. I'm interested in the width of this I-70. I was under the impression that it was going to be 10 lanes wide, that is, five lanes in each direction, two of which were toll lanes and the other three were general purpose lanes. I hear tonight you're talking about one toll lane. Does that mean you have reduced the width of the project from 10 to 8 lanes? And secondly, if that is true, in the cut between Colorado Boulevard and Brighton Boulevard, will you cut to accommodate only 8 lanes, or will you cut to accommodate 10 lanes? And if so, what happens to lane 9 and 10 in the interim?
Tony, you want to take that?
So, Frank, good question. The Phase 1 project builds an additional lane throughout the entire length. Now, in the cut section, we have to build for sustainability, and the traffic growth and the traffic model that we are using demonstrates that we will need an ultimate template of 10 lanes. And so in the cut section between Brighton Boulevard and Colorado, we will be building to a 10-lane template in that stretch. They will be striped with 8 lanes and a wider shoulder designed for the future and for this future sustainability.
All right. Thank you. We're going to get to one more question, and I'm going to ask you to grab a pen or pencil because I'm going to give you some information also after this call where you can find more information. So let's take a last call from Sam. Sam, go ahead.
Hi there. A couple of people have mentioned some good points, such as the VA hospital and the overruns, as well as Andrea a moment ago talking about proven track records with regard to the developers. Are there any accounting firms or accounting that's going to be hired on for, say, risk evaluation and assessment and monitoring of the $1.17 billion project?
Mike, good question, Amy, or Sam, thank you. Mike, go ahead.
Sam, for sure. Not sure it's going to be an accounting firm, but just as we did in the recent US 36 project, we will be engaging professional help, consulting help, to help us monitor the performance on the project over time. It's quite an important part of the whole concept of public-private partnerships, to make sure that you've allocated responsibility and also have a means of tracking that responsibility.
Thank you, Mike. So here's just a couple items. If you'd like more information, you can visit the website at i70east.com. That's i-70east, i-70east.com. If you want to have a question or comment, you can always email the team at contactus@i70east.com, or you can leave a voicemail at the project office, and that phone number is 303-757-9413. We appreciate your participation tonight. It was a good call. And if we didn't get to your question tonight, you can still leave us a voice message at the end of the call, so just stay on the line. On behalf of the panel, CDOT and HPTE, thank you and have a good evening.